Welcome to the One Question Podcast, brought to you by Wabi Sabi Studios. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, and I love having unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. It's a huge passion of mine, so much so that I wrote a few books a while back that challenge people's notion on living a life more unconventionally. This entire podcast stems around one question. If there was one topic you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
I was suddenly driving along and thought, I'm an adult, I'm a grown woman and I can make decisions for myself and I don't think I really need to go home and continue to look after everybody else. I might just take a moment to think about what it is that I want to do next.
Monique Van Tulder knows this generation of midlife women have had enough. With helicopter parenting, juggling careers, perhaps professional life taking a backseat, or caring for aging family members, it's time for second act women to spend resources and time on themselves. Yeah, don't we all hear you? Monique is leading conversations on midlife well-being. She's teaching others on how to expand a midlife in joy and creating space for themselves, encouraging them to design their guidebook for a grown-up's gap year. Authentically sharing her story of midlife reinvigoration, her own eat, pray, runaway and return adventure, she actually abandoned her family for 8 months, Monique's wisdom inspires other women to prioritize health and well-being, financial literacy, retirement or professional life, and of course, travel retreats and adventure thrown in there as well. Monique leads an engaged online community of like-minded mid-age women who want to regain control of their lives. Her mantra, now is your time, sounds like just the antidote for many of us living a life seemingly for others and not for ourselves any longer, which is something that I truly believe on and try and encourage you all to do more. So let's hear from the wonderful Monique Van Tulder. Monique, I am so excited to sit with you, you gorgeous woman. Thank you very much for coming on the show and welcome.
Michelle, thank you. It's a super opportunity. I'm very excited. There's a lot of stellar guests that go before, so thank you for having me.
You've been a long time supporter of the podcast and an avid listener, I know. You give me great feedback on different episodes, so how wonderful it is to have you here. So let's kick in. If there is one thing that you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
In essence, it is, what is stopping you from closing the gap between the world you inhabit and the one you never explored but wish you did?
Huge topic.
Why are you not doing those things that you wanted to do?
Yeah, amazing. That's the guts of it, isn't it? Why are you not doing those things you wanted to do? So how did you get here? Why is this a topic that you're so passionate about, Monique?
Look, I feel like a middle-aged cliche. And when I speak to that particular topic, probably midlife women are top of mind, but not specifically women, because this is, you know, we're all human and we all have the, you know, similar sorts of experiences. But I did. I woke up when I was about 54. A couple of situations happened in life, and the final straw, I think, that broke my malaise was a sudden death of a friend. And it was during COVID, but it wasn't due to COVID. And he was my adventure buddy when we were younger. And, you know, I guess my forever person. Hadn't spent a lot of time together over the years. He had a family on the other side of the world. I had my family here. But his sudden death, and I thought, oh, okay. And so, you know, I stood and sort of looked at myself in the mirror and I wasn't thrilled with what I saw. I was, you know, sad, mad, sweaty, perpetually pissed off and just felt immense disappointment that I sort of slid into simply existing and not necessarily living due to a variety of circumstances and, you know, young teenage sons and a variety of hormones going left, right and center and whatever, whatever. But anyway, as it was, stood there and thought, right, okay, things have got to change. So it's a cliche, but it was the final event.
Yeah, a bit cliche it may be, but I think the key point is that you've done something about it. One, that you recognized it, that was what was going on with your life, and two, saying enough. You know, there's so many people in the world, and I know this because I get challenged, I guess, or people are curious about my life and what I do. And they're like, how do you do that? How did you change? How did you, you know, do the things you do? And, you know, it takes a certain amount of bravery, doesn't it? So talk us through how, like, obviously you had that pivotal moment. sadly, I'm sorry that you lost your friend. That's a terrible way to get to this point. But often it does take quite catastrophic or dramatic events in people's lives for them to realize that they're not living a life that's truly what they want to do. Talk us through that experience, Monique, and what happened after that.
And look, and it wasn't my first wake-up either. I'd had thyroid cancer in my early 20s, and whilst cancer is cancer, but it wasn't terminal diagnosis, nevertheless, that should have or could have been a wake-up call to sort of stop and listen to the universe. And it did for a while, but then life being life, you just get back on track. So to your point, you know, what did I then do? Well, life is brilliant in hindsight, and I didn't quite realise it at the time, but what I had started to do unconsciously is treat myself like a project. Because I think if you sort of divorce yourself back from the situation and start to see yourself as a project, it makes, you know, little changes and lifestyle tweaks just so much easier. It takes the emotion out of it and you can start putting things into practice. So well-being has always been the top sort of pillar of my life, I suppose. And so I had exercise and movement and good nutrition in the bag, and that's, you know, my professional chops, I suppose. But nevertheless, I still was just kind of turning up on remote control rather than actually being purposeful about it. So I started to really just tweak my well-being first, you know, work out my sleep, have a chat to the doctor about what might be going on from a hormonal perspective. And this is probably about 3 or 4 years ago now. It's at the beginning of the journey, and no one was talking about perimenopause. It's only 4 years ago. We just didn't have that conversation or the words for it. Anyway, and just cleaned up my act, became really strong. And it was never about how you look or, you know, being a particular weight or any of those sorts of things. But suddenly all the goals that I was subconsciously chasing in terms of feeling better just started to fall into place when I put my head down and just quietly kept on making small movements and small lifestyle tweaks. And then the gold unfolded. When I felt better, the rest of it started to happen.
Yeah. And so you started to have more and more conversations with people around this kind of midlife well-being, is what you call it. It's a beautiful way to term what you do. And obviously we met a while ago and we've had lots of different dealings with each other through various things. And I love learning more and more about you and what you do. And what is it that gives you the most joy these days in terms of the work that you're doing and the way that you're helping others? And then also something I've seen, even in the short time I've known you, is this blossoming where it's like, you know, you're building on it more and more, where you're getting more confident and you're speaking more, you know, you're being more outspoken, I guess, about, you know, living life more authentically and loving middle life rather than, you know, women, we get to 45 and then we turn invisible. So it's like, well, you're like, I'm not having any of that, you know, and you're a model, you're like incredibly talented in so many different things, Monique. So talk to me about the passion part that's sort of come through in the last sort of months and years.
Thank you. I think it stems from giving yourself permission to be yourself at the end of the day. And whose life are you actually living? Well, you're living your own, but we all become burdened with other people's needs. And I have a line in the book, something along the lines of, in essence, I was the top of everyone else's pyramid of people we need and very much the bottom of my own. And I know you've had guests on before that have talked about, you know, putting on your own oxygen mask and creating space in your own life. And, you know, they're all words until you actually create some sort of action out of it. And you know, to the point of other guests, you know, if once you start making those small steps and you go from there and off you go. But I should step back a little bit. I actually ran away from my family for 8 months.
Yeah, that's quite significant.
It was fantastic. Living genius. Oh, my God. And I didn't, again, I'm a really bad planner. I just had started to plot. And I think half of my, I call it a middle-class, middle-aged malaise, because I think it is very privileged to be able to, you know, step back from your life and have a little think about what you want to do next and how you want to live the rest of your life. So many people in the world are merely surviving, and it isn't an option for them. So to step back a tiny bit, I think I realized that, okay, I've got all of these opportunities. I need to feel really well. I need to feel strong. I need to feel confident, because if I feel all of those things, then I can actually go and help other people who maybe are not in that position. And I am jumping around a little bit here, and I'll come back to the question. But it's frightening to me that the largest growing, you know, demographic of homelessness in Australia, the lucky country, is middle-aged women. I mean, that's just phenomenal. Yes. And, you know, superannuation, which came in, you know, sort of at the inception of our working career and our generation, Gen X or so, is so low as a collective. We just don't have super. So I don't know how on earth, you know, so many people are going to retire and actually be able to live a longer and healthier and happier life. But anyway, so I, yes, got well, got strong and all of those sorts of things. We have a house in North Queensland. So I joke that I sort of popped up there to pick up the mail and get some new light bulbs. And I was suddenly driving along and thought, oh my goodness, I am actually, I'm an adult. I'm a grown woman and I can make decisions for myself. And I don't think I really need to go home and continue to look after everybody else. I might just take a moment to think about what it is that I want to do next. You know, I'm feeling better, but now what happens and what comes next? So I did that.
Is what happened? You just literally stayed up there.
Yeah. Well, they all followed me for a hot meal. I actually sent them a note one night and said, here's a PO box I've just had installed for myself. And if you need me, I'll be here. I should have put the extra line of, you know, don't hurry here. But anyway, they did. And so then I jumped on a plane and went to Europe to, yes, visit my father and my sister. But then I stayed on for another 12 weeks and had a grown-up's gap year. In essence, just did exactly what I wanted to do. You know, I did have a period of manic thrill and excitement and almost became a teenager again. I went para jumping and, you know, did all of those sorts of, again, cliched things. But then the most important thing that I actually did was sit very still in a very quiet alpine village where I knew nobody, couldn't speak the language, and thought, okay, so now what comes next? What's important in life moving forward?
And was it frightening, like, to sit there? Because sometimes, you know, sitting in quiet, no one else around, like, it's pretty daunting, you know, for people that don't do that often, and especially for mums that you're so used to, you know, your kids are older, like, for 20 plus years, like, have no time to yourself, never any time to think. How did you find that moment, like, thinking back, sitting there?
I checked out an hour after I checked in because I'd booked this particular spot. It's so me, because I remember this creeping feeling. So I'd spent the previous couple of weeks with my sister in the French Alps, and the French are well known for their joy of life. And, you know, we'd had wonderful dancing sunsets on the top of Alps with DJs from Ibiza and so on and so forth. And it was wonderful. And then I remember as the train that was taking me to this particular retreat got closer and closer, we sort of arrived in Zurich, and Zurich is beautiful, but very Swiss and very sort of organized and more subdued. And then I jumped in a cab to take me deeper into the Alps. And, you know, there was a lot of green and a lot of cows and just not much else. And I was starting to think, what on earth have I done? You know, I was enjoying that European summer feeling, now what? And checked into the resort and or the retreat. And I remember going into my room, and I came to love that room, but my first thought was, oh my God, it's so sparse. What on earth am I going to do here? And why am I here? And so I went down to reception and said, look, I've booked for 10 nights, but I suddenly have to go somewhere. The family needs me. I can only stay for two. And anyway, I ended up staying for about 14 nights. I extended. But yeah, my immediate thought was, what am I going to do? And oh my God, I really am actually here by myself, and I need to now sit here. Learn to love that experience. But yeah, I was frightened.
So how did you start then? Did you start, like, by journaling or walking or, you know, being in nature or exercising? What was the first sort of steps? Because it's quite a significant change of life, like, you know, that, you know, pace of life, I guess. What were the first initial things you did?
Look, all of the above. And I'm a firm believer in a really successful, happy, joy-filled day begins the night before. So I had arrived late afternoon and I thought, righty-ho, let's think about what you're going to do when you wake up in the morning and, well, you know, we'll take it from there. So as per usual, my first thing to do is, well, I lie there for 5 minutes thinking about, you know, how lucky I am. That's just my default position when I have my eyes open. But then the next thing is to move. So I put on my running shoes and I went on a massive hike the next morning, listening to podcasts, may have even had you in my ears, actually, now that I think about it, and came back. And fortuitously, I walked past the exercise room and I saw all these people in there with these headphones on, you know, those silent disco type headphones. And these, you know, lovely young guys said, oh, come in. Are you here for the, you know, the movement class? I'm like, oh, well, why not? And had proceeded to go in there and had the best 30-minute workout I'd had for years and years. Fantastic, fun, young music and, you know, all ages in the room, you know, from 20-year-olds up to about 70-year-olds. I just felt so alive. And I thought, okay, fine. I found my tribe. I'm here. And let's see how the rest unfolds.
Oh, how wonderful. So then fast forward now. So you've decided to write a book about this experience and it's coming out in June. You're in the throes now. Most of it's been written. It's called A Grown-Up's Gap Year. So are all the experience that, you know, that you found then post kind of running away, having your own gap year and thought, wow, this has like been so significant for me. Everyone needs to know this. Is this kind of why you've written the book? And what are the kind of top things that you're doing, that you're writing about that you want to share with people?
Look, I write. I've always written. I am a writer. And so to your point about journaling before, I keep notes in my phone every minute of every day. Everything is copy. And, it, you know, whether it gets used or not, that's what I love to do. And so I had kept notes to myself every day. And I thought as I was going along in Europe and in North Queensland, I on Instagram, love being on Instagram, a lovely community. And I thought, well, you know what, I'll come back and I'll write a bit of a travel log, how to just get away, you know, what a great idea. However, as I was going along, I'd sort of had in the back of my mind, gosh, this is probably quite a self-indulgent trip. You know, it's very fortunate. You know, I'm quite conscious of that. However, a lot of my readers were making it really clear that actually far from that, they were seeing it as inspirational, aspirational, and lots of questions every day about how can I do this for myself? How can I feel better? And that's the overarching theme of the book, is how can I feel better so that I can go and live an expanded midlife enjoy? It's as simple as that. So that is what the book is about. And it is written in a travel guide style, but it goes deeper. So it talks about how can you simplify and streamline your life, which is number one, because we're all living very, very complicated lives, and I don't think it needs to be that way. Yes, the practical tips about well-being and movement and eating well and sleeping well and our hormones, and then community, you know, how do we connect? And then, you know, the final aspect of the book, of course, is, you know, go and explore your universe in whatever way that looks for you. And there is no one path to any of this. And I think that we can look to our grandparents for a successful, you know, midlife, because as I said, we are very, very complicated now. And I think streamlining our life and worrying less about what is wellness and all of the other malarkey that goes with how we're meant to be living our lives, and just sit back and think about what's really, really important.
So true. And I think it's interesting, similar to you, I've had an opportunity, you know, and sometimes they've not been great circumstances that I've landed in those opportunities, having roles made redundant. So losing your job sort of overnight is a bit of a fast way to be on a gap year, which is what I did the first time. So I was like, yeah, well, I've never not worked, so I'm going to take this as a break. I got paid out. So I'm like, I'm going to spin this, you know, as I tend to do. Anything that's happened to me bad in life, I try and turn around and go, what do I need to learn from this? And so that was the first time I took a nice break, and I got to do amazing things that I would never have had a chance to do. But the thing that I loved, and it probably pulls on that thread that you're just talking about there, is about the simplicity. So, you know, going to Cambodia as I did for 2 months and working in a school, you know, I rode a little bike to school every day. I literally had this tiny little suitcase that I lived out of for 2 months, and all the things that I love, like I love nice things. I love like nice, you know, I have a great wardrobe, beautiful handbags, all the things that I've cherished through my life as a professional and, you know, earned my own money enough to buy those nice things. None of that mattered. You know, I found it was so beautiful to get down to that simplicity of just eating with people really simply every day, riding a bike to work, you know, doing beautiful things for others as part of my job. And it was a very cherished time in life. And I found that it was, how could I bring more of that? You know, how could I bring more of that element into what I was doing into my normal life when I went back to Sydney and back to life again? And that was sort of, I was on the pursuit of that. So did you have a similar experience in terms of that, you know, element and how you would encourage people to live a simpler life?
Look, absolutely. And, you know, I guess it goes back to my upbringing and having a look at your childhood. I certainly did sit with that for a bit, because you can lose yourself, and it's not unique. I think this, you know, that midlife is an opportunity to look forward, but I think before you do that, look back a little bit and have a think about what your values are now, but what they were when you were a kid. Like, what sorts of things did you love to do? What were you drawn to before all of a sudden you found yourself potentially on a trajectory that was somebody else's idea of your good life and not necessarily your own? And my upbringing was a clean, green New Zealand, you know, sort of very health-filled, adventure-filled upbringing for the first 10 years of my life. And then we, you know, moved to Fiji and my parents were yachties and skiers and water skiers and we hiked. We did all of those sorts of things. And that was missing from my life. I may have kept fit, but I wasn't seeking, you know, those sorts of nature adventures anymore. And as soon as I arrived in the Alps and went on that first big hike, I thought, oh, I'm home. You know, here I am. This is it. And so, you know, to your point about bringing it home and keeping that great feeling going, it is hard. I do offer, I don't like the word blueprint necessarily, but I do offer a bit of a regime in the book to help the readers just maybe design their own version of being on retreat and living that lifestyle across their whole life. Because I do also think it is a bit of a trick. You go away, you feel better, you simplify your life. I took a suitcase that I thought was pretty streamlined in terms of, you know, wardrobe and other bits and pieces with me. And actually after the first few days in the Alps, I actually shipped it home, half of it, and went around almost with hand luggage because I wanted to collect experiences, not stuff. Didn't need the stuff. I love the nice stuff. And I will never shy away from thinking a great pair of shoes is the bee's knees.
You're a glamazon. You can't, there's no way people following you can. You always look amazing, Monique. So.
Thank you very much. But I do like that. And I do like an aesthetic lifestyle. But I think if you looked at my wardrobe, there aren't that many pieces in there. You know, we're getting off topic if I start talking about, you know, buy less, but buy better. But it's true and not necessarily expensive. I'm very good at making a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
You are very talented. So let's come back around then about your key topic of, you know, what's stopping you from living the life you want or doing what you want to do. What are your key messages for people? You know, because I've found that sometimes when I have conversations with mates about this and they go, oh, but I can't do this, but I can't, and I go, but why not? You know, I'm quite harsh on them because, as I said, it does take courage, but it also, you need to stop the excuse mentality because we're always going to have excuses. Every one of us could have an excuse, you know, for a reason why we couldn't do this or we can't live the life or we can't do the job we want or we can't travel or whatever. But I'm curious on your view on that, Monique, because, yeah, I'm a little, as I say, I get a little bit harsh with people these days because I'm like, stop it. Like, stop making excuses and, you know, saying how lucky I am to have the life I had. I've had a lot of shit happen to me and I feel incredibly lucky and privileged and all the things to live the life I do, but it didn't come without pain, struggle, the tenacity, all the grit, you know, all the things. And I think some people don't always realize that, right?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I agree with you and don't know if I should really say what I'm about to say next, but, you know, I have this conversation with my husband. I say, you know, I am really grateful for all the adversity in my younger years and certainly all the challenges that came my way because that did build the grit and the tenacity to your point. And I also look at my own children and I think, oh, I hope they haven't had the adversity that I had, but I do hope that I've been able to, as a parent, be able to impart enough discomfort so that they're also going to have some sort of tenacity and wherewithal to be able to go out there and, you know, in essence, take life by the balls and give it a good shake and go and actually live it rather than just slide along, you know, into, I don't know, demise in the end. But look, my advice is anybody can do it and it doesn't come down to money and circumstances because, you know, there's so many examples of that is not what it takes to live a good life and a, you know, a life in joy. And I have some fantastic examples from other women. And actually, and a guy, because it can't just be for the girls, it's got to be for, you know, for all of us, how, you know, various people have overcome all sorts of circumstances in life to now be living a life that speaks to them. And I have a chapter in my book about my rest in peace, late mother-in-law, there is no one path. So my version of a life and joy is not yours and is not somebody else's. And my mother-in-law was really, really happy to not necessarily travel, to live just within her means, within her suburb, surrounded by her community. And that was it for her. And I think the younger version of me looked at that and thought, oh God, that's not life. That's so boring. But actually, as I've matured and had my own life experiences, I realized that, yeah, there is no one path, but there's always an opportunity to do it the way that you want to do it and just be creative about your possibilities and go wide. When I came back from my trip, I applied for jobs as international flight attendant because I thought that's what I always wanted to do. I was always in travel management, managing teams, but I thought, oh, so much more fun to be on a plane every day. And no, it turns out probably it's not what I need to do. But, you know, just list all the things you never did, tick them off and try and just say to yourself, I can do all of these things, but do I really want to do them and what makes me happy? That's it.
No, it's a really good point. And I think that, you know, you might have something that's sitting in your mind, at the back of your mind, deep dark closet in your head of saying, oh, I always wanted to do this. But you're rightly so. Like, you get to this point of life and then, as you said earlier, sit with that and go, do I really truly want to do that? If money, time, circumstance was not at all a hindrance and I could do that one thing that I've always thought I would I genuinely want to be a flight attendant, as using that example? And often I think you find
swapping one dishwasher for another.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. You sit and you ponder that stuff because you haven't really gone through the scenario, I guess, of having it. And then you're like, oh, you can release it. It's like, actually, no, I genuinely don't want to do that. So it's kind of nice to have that realization as well. What a beautiful thought.
Look, and it's so important and it's so true. And, you know, again, I went back and I wanted to finish my law degree because my mother had always said that's what you need to do. And I went back about 10 years ago and studied full time and then realized, oh God, that's not what I ever wanted to do. But now I'm not going to die wondering. And I think that's the point and that's probably where it comes around full circle. Just don't die wondering. And you can do anything. You really, really can, but do you want it enough? And the clients that I, you know, mentor one-on-one, same thing. They come with a shopping list of all these fabulous things they want to do. And as we unpick it all, it's like, yeah, okay, fine. Probably 3/4 of those could leave the list because actually you think you want them, but you don't necessarily want them. Or you're not prepared to make the sacrifices that it will take to make those a reality. That, you know, then it's not that important.
What a great way to finish this of don't die wondering. It's such a great message. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. It's been an absolute delight.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Well, there you have it. Wasn't that an incredible conversation? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to you. If you did like it, can I ask a small favour? Please rate and review on your listening platform for me. I know everyone asks this, but it seriously makes a difference to help get these conversations out in the world and makes all the hard work and effort I put into this for you all the more worthwhile. And until next time, if you have one question you'd like to ask me, hit me up on my socials or jump on my website, michellejcox.com.